Good jobs, quality jobs.
We still have so much to do for women's rights.
For the parents to go to work, you need good childcare.
We will not have a successful recovery if we leave social rights.
Reinventing our way of building and living.
It is all right.
Hello, and welcome to this special episode of Eurofan Talks. Eurofan Talks, gender equality. Equality is a key principle of the European Pillar of Social Rights. It reaffirms that women and men have the right to equal pay for work of equal value. We have a gender equality strategy, which lays down a series of objectives and actions to make progress towards a more gender equal Europe by 2025. And it is quite simply one of the core objectives of the EU. Women and men should receive equal pay for equal work. And we have worked hard to ensure that both in terms of the gender employment gap and the gender pay gap, there has been progress, at least in the right direction. But in both areas, in terms of income and in terms of access and participation to the labour market, there are still considerable gaps. And we are looking to close them as we have targets to do so by 2030 at the latest. And it would seem that despite all of these principles and instruments, progress towards gender equality, both at the workplace and outside of it, has been progressing, but haphazardly. So today I'm joined by Carlos Vacas and Barbara Gerstenberger, who are both experts in this area, and they're going to discuss the gender pay gap and the gender employment gap and to look at really what are these resistant drivers that keep us from achieving our objectives and looking at what policymakers can actually do to close these gaps. So I think really to set the scene, I'd like to go to you first, Carlos, if that's okay. Yeah. And we'll talk about the gender pay gap. Now, that's different from the gender employment gap, of course, but can you just give us an idea across the EU, where is it highest, where is it lowest, and what kind of have been the trends over recent years?
Yes, so currently, according to the latest data, which refers to 2021, it stands at almost 13%. That's using a measure for hourly wages, right? So that would mean that on average, a woman will get, to be concrete, 12.7% lower wage per hour than the male. That's for the EU average. And then, of course, we see quite significant differences across countries. For example, if we look at those where this gap is larger, we find it more than 20% in Estonia and close to that in Austria or Germany, for example. While on the other range of the scale, it's rather low, below 5% in other countries like Belgium, Italy, Poland, Slovenia, Romania. And for the first time, and this is something new, we see this gender pay gap is in fact negative in Luxembourg for the first time. So basically what you see in Luxembourg, it's a very low value of 0.2%, but it's negative, meaning that women get higher wages than male. And the reason why this is the first time we see it is because, in fact, in the last years, we have seen declining values of the gender pay gap. So the gender pay gap is closing down, right? It's narrowing over time. For example, just to give you the data for the EU as a whole, it was almost 16% in 2010, a decade ago. And as I told you, it is below 13%. In 2021. So basically, we have seen a decline in 3 percentage points in the magnitude of the gap over one decade. So,
but you've also indicated that's quite a wide range of country differences there. And what's quite surprising for me is to hear that Germany and Austria, for example, are up in the 20% bracket. And maybe you can explain a little bit what explains these country differences specifically. I know we can't go into them all in detail, but just to give us an idea before we drill down a little bit further.
Yes. Well, first of all, it's important to mention that even in those countries where I told you it's much higher, it declined as well. So basically, we see in the data.
So the trend is going in the correct way for all of these countries.
Across most of the countries, there has been a decline.
But there's resistance in some still, yeah?
Not sure it's a matter of resistance, but, you know, it hasn't declined in all of them. But in most of them, yes, and quite significantly, especially in the most recent years. What explains, you say, like... First, I would like to make a very general point. I think we don't have to jump very quickly to the conclusion that a lower gender pay gap indicates a better situation for female in the labor market. We are going to talk about the employment gap, for example, in a second. So, you know, it would be easy to say, okay, a country with a lower gender pay gap means females are in a better situation in the labor market. That's not necessarily correct because, for example, using the example of Germany that you mentioned, we could talk Germany or Sweden, Finland, Denmark, which are countries that have been always characterized as being quite, high in the gender equality agenda, right? Because they managed to integrate women into the labor market. So basically, they work significantly more than in other countries, right? Mm. Females. But you see still that the gender pay gap is quite high. On the contrary, there are countries that are famous for the opposite, right? Where females participate much less in the workforce, for example, Italy or Romania. But in those countries precisely, you see a very low gender pay gap. So one of the reasons why you say that is because in this second group of countries where females participate much less in employment, what happens is that maybe females face more barriers to go from inactivity into employment. So maybe they may be more into taking care of, family members or just being inactive.
Domestic responsibilities.
Exactly. And then those females that decide to participate in the labor market are those females that have very high educational levels. So when they participate, they tend to get good pay levels, right? Because they get like relatively good jobs. So then as a result, you see a low gender pay gap. But can you say the situation of females is better in those countries?
Not necessarily.
You have to look at the wider picture. So
that's an interesting point, because if you look at income, are you seeing that the pay gap is higher when you're talking about these higher earners? Or in fact, is it amongst the lower earners?
Well, when you look at, if you distinguish among level of pay, of course, maybe it's counterintuitive, but the gender pay gap tends to be larger among higher wage earners.
Okay.
So, for example, if you distinguish, the type of jobs that people is working at, so whether they are like higher paying jobs or lower paying jobs, you are going to see on average across countries and in each every member state in the European Union, you are going to see that the gender pay gap is larger in the better paying jobs, right? So what that's telling you is two things. On the one hand, we know females are less likely to be in those jobs. So basically, we can say, they suffer a penalty in the sense that they access less that type of better paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And once they do, they have a large gender pay gap in those jobs, right? And then the gender pay gap is much lower when you go into the jobs that are characterized by lower wages.
Okay.
Even though it may sound counterintuitive, at the end it's a matter of, the larger the wage level, the larger the scope for wage disparities, right?
But
if you are on minimum wage levels, there's little scope for large wage disparities to emerge.
It still seems to mean that if you earn more, or the more you earn as a woman, the bigger the gap is between you and the man in the same job.
In the same job, yes, exactly.
Okay, and where are we seeing that? I mean, is that in ICT? Is it in health? Is it in what sectors are we seeing that kind of pay gap being most pronounced?
In terms of sectors, again, it's tricky sometimes because, for example, what you see, and this is related to the need always to look at the employment gap as well. For example, what you see is that sometimes in those sectors where the mix of male and female is more proportionate, mm-hmm. so there's no segregation by gender in the sectors, for example, financial services, in there you see a larger gap, right? On the contrary, if you go to, for example, male-dominated sectors, like, for example, construction or mining, in there the gap is lower. But that's just because maybe female in those sectors, you know, are not doing the job for which the sector is famous, but maybe they are in office jobs in the mining sector or in the construction sector, for example. So the gender pay gap tends to be lower there. But the general point is the same as I told you before. The higher the wage levels, the larger the scope for the gaps to emerge. Mm-hmm. And normally the gender pay gap will tend to be larger in those sectors characterized by higher wage levels.
Okay. Same idea. And yet one of the interesting things about the labor market recently is that there are more women entering in the highest quintile of jobs than ever before. So in fact, while they may be entering into those jobs more, their experience will be that the gap is greater with the men that they find themselves with.
Yes, but it depends on what you look at. So if you look only at those very high paying jobs and you only focus on those, the gap may be larger. But as a result, in the total situation of female, the mm-hmm. gap is closing down, right? That's why you see declining gender pay gaps. Because if you get more women into these high pay sectors, while the gap may increase only if you are looking at those sectors, in general, of you know the complete picture of the labor market, the women are managing to close down the gap. And that's what you see across most countries, in fact.
Okay, but I mean, we've talked about before the various elements which are at play here, and they're complicated and multidimensional. So we're not going to touch on all of them again today. But one of the issues is about women working part-time. I mean, we know they're more likely to do that, to manage their work-life balance, to take on care responsibilities, and indeed other issues. But perhaps you can talk to us a little bit about this sort of part-time penalty, because we know it applies more to women than to men. Is that contributing to the gender pay gap in a significant way?
Yeah, so it does. So among the reasons we know why the gender pay gap exists, I would say there are two main reasons. One is we talk about it now, the sector where women works. So women tend to work relatively more in lower paying sectors. So that explains part of the gender pay gap. Other second reason is the part-time employment. So we know females are much more likely to work part-time. So of course that's going to result in a larger gender pay gap. It's important to remember that in this measure that we have for the gender pay gap, we are talking about hourly wages, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not only the fact that women working more part-time will have a lower monthly wage, which makes sense if you're working less hours.
Yeah.
What it means is that even in hourly terms, taking into account that you work less hours, there's still a penalty. And the reason is because we know, based on research, doesn't matter if you're a female or a male, people working part-time tends to get lower wages as well in hourly rate than those working full-time. And since females are more likely to work part-time, then they suffer as a result. This is one of the reasons for the gender pay gap.
Yeah, so we know that that's one of the reasons, and I suppose that's slightly intuitive. We could imagine that being the case. But what other driving forces are there behind this?
So I told you it was the gender pay gap, the sectors where they work at, because they tend to work in lower paying sectors. And then other reason is that female are less likely to work in jobs that imply a supervisory role. Mm-hmm. So it may be the result of the glass ceiling, right? That maybe women are less likely to access those positions that come with a supervisory role. So those will be the three main factors. But it's important to mention that when we try to explain why the gender pay gap exists, when we use, you know, the survey data we have available to try to characterize females and males and see what different characteristics they have, which different jobs they do to try to explain why the gender pay gap exists, we are only able to explain a third of this gender pay gap. So that means 2/3 of the gender pay gap that we see existing across European Union countries on average, we cannot explain it with the data we have.
So how do we explain it, Carlos?
The way the research goes about it is more in the past and to a certain extent still now. It will be like, okay, so the part that we cannot explain, which is very significant, as I told you, is 2/3 of the gender pay gap around, has been used as a proxy for discrimination, right? So if we cannot explain it with the data we have, it has to mean that women and men are being paid differently for work of the same attributes, right? Like of the same value. So that would be like a proxy of discrimination, which of course research shows that it exists, that it can have, you know, forms like unfair promotion and demotion practices at the workplace, for example. Now, that doesn't mean 2/3 of the gender pay that we cannot explain are due to discrimination. There are as well other body of research that talks about the fact that, you know, surveys are quite limited in the information that you can grasp from females and males in the labor market. So there are other factors that seem to be important, which surveys fail to capture, right? And for example, the most mentioned there is like, for example, the cumulative length of professional experience of male and female, right?
Which like, feeds into that part-time issue as well.
Yes, so how long had they been working, for example, without interruptions? Because we know the main issue, the really main factor for females to lag behind in pay emerges once they take breaks for, you know, for maternity. Mm-hmm. So we know that's when it starts. So we cannot really capture that well with the data we have in the surveys. So if we were able to, we would be able to explain more of the gender pay gap, and we can't. Other type of things that we cannot capture in surveys and could be important to understand the gender
is
pay gap.
Women don't shout loud enough for pay rise.
Yes, that has been mentioned as well. So it's like the gender differences in attitudes and behaviors, for example, when you know, bargaining your wage with the employer, or, you know, the negotiating skills you may have, how pushy you may be to get the pay rise, for example. That could be other of the factors that could be behind the gender pay gap. But with the data we have, we just don't know.
Okay. But we can, I suppose, extract something from it in knowing that there is an attitudinal issue, there's some level of sort of latent, whether it's discrimination or just, I suppose, lack of action, exists in a way where some of the characteristics, perhaps, which are learned by women, prevent that ongoing upward spiral of their pay during the years. But of course, the fundamental one that we're looking at, which does occupy our minds, is the fact that you're talking about part-time, you're talking about maybe precarious work because you're in and out of the market a lot more. And that feeling of not being able to have a solid longitudinal approach to your career and your pay does penalize you here. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for based on the data we know, sector of where you work, part-time are the main issues. Then, the other things we have to infer from other research, but there's no direct data on that. But as you said, for sure, the one that is very important is the fact that your career gets interrupted at some point. That's essential. We cannot capture it with survey data at the moment. But that's the main factor we know, because we know before that breaks happen in the labor market, there's not really a significant gender pay gap. It starts after breaks start to take place.
That's a nice kind of link into what I want to talk to you about, Barbara, is the labor market. And in fact, it's about the employment gap. And where we look at a gender employment gap, it is about where are women in the labour market and why are they not, if they're not. And can you talk to us a little bit about just the differentiation between that, the pay and the employment gap, but also where are we seeing that most in Europe?
Sure, Mary. So, yes, of course, there is a link between the gender employment gap and the gender pay gap. But let's first define what we understand by the gender employment gap. It's the difference between the employment rates of men and women. And Eurostat, the EU statistical office, looks at the population between 20 and 64 years old and then calculates the share of people who are working or, as Eurostat puts it, are engaged in productive activity, either as employees or as self-employed. And in 2022, which is the last year for which we have confirmed data, 80% of men in this group, 20 to 64 year olds, were working, while it was 69.3% for women. And that's a gap of more than 10%, to be very precise, 10.7 percentage points. Tiny improvement if we compare to the year before, 2021, where the gap stood at 10.5 percentage points. And if we look back a little bit longer, we see that we are absolutely on the right trajectory. 15, 16 years ago in 2008, we were still at a gender employment gap of 14 percentage points. So we're going in the right direction, but at the same time, it's difficult to see how at this pace we will be able to reach the EU's goal for reducing the gender employment gap to below 6 percentage points by 2030. So, you know, we have to hurry up here. And that is the situation everywhere in the EU. The employment rate of men is higher than that of women in all EU member states. But in some of them, the difference is rather small. So the Baltic countries, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, also Finland, stand out with a gap of around 3 percentage points. So already below the target that we have set ourselves as the European Union. And then on the other hand of the spectrum, we have Italy and Greece with a gender employment gap of around 20 percentage points. And again, keep in mind what Carlos said earlier, Italy, a gender employment gap of 20 percentage points and a gender pay gap of only around 5%. So that's actually quite interesting. And Carlos already gave a bit of an explanation why that could be the case.
Sure. And what do you think are the factors that are at play there, Barbara? What are the most defined issues that we're looking at?
The availability of childcare, of public childcare, is vital, along with facts about how expensive is it, the cost, the quality, how compatible is the childcare that's on offer with normal working hours. All this plays a role. But even if good childcare is offered, the actual take-up of this opportunity appears to reflect so-called ideals of care, meaning that there are different cultural expectations and cultural values in relation to child rearing. So is it first and foremost the mother's task to look after a child, or is good quality public childcare an accepted or even preferred advantageous alternative? And then second, the flexibility of employment and working time measures will always help to reconcile work and family duties. And if companies offer this, if there are laws that regulate this, this increases women's labor market attachment. But little caveat here, if they are exclusively used by women, and we have talked about this just now, there is a risk that reducing hours, working part-time, is interpreted as a sign of lack of commitment.
Stepping and then, the ladder.
Exactly. Mm. And that can hamper women's career progression. And that, again, leads to pay differences.
But what is interesting, what you're saying there about the availability of good quality childcare, because that is the mantra amongst many, both policymakers and also people in society. But what you're saying is that we also see a gap there, which is emerging between those were it to have full scale childcare facilities available, would still not opt to choose them as distinct from joining the labour market.
And the other point is that, of course, lack of childcare should, in theory, impact fathers just as well as mothers. Mm. There is a lack of opportunity to have your young child looked after by somebody else, not the parents. Funnily enough, it is women, it's mothers who bear the brunt of this additional care responsibility, and fathers are much more removed in most cases from these responsibilities.
And there's some elements of that you can understand on a second or a third or indeed maybe a fourth child. But the first child, that decision, as Carla said earlier, we can see that there is no gender pay gap up until that first child. And yet it's when that happens that the decision is made on the basis of, I suppose, the future earning potential as well. And then beyond that, you've already lost your rung on the ladder in a way that makes it more beneficial for the male to continue working. But Barbara, is this something that we can actually resolve, or is it an intractable problem? I mean, because before we talked about gender segregation in the labour market, and we talked about and how that sort of impacts on the way women operate within the labour market. But if they can't even get to the labour market, how can we even begin to deal with that when cultural norms are so varied across so many different member states, as you said at the start?
Yeah, I think it really starts very early in the life course on career planning. And labour market segregation is really part of the explanation here. Because we see that despite closing the gender employment gap on the one hand, even if it's rather slowly, jobs are not becoming more gender mixed. And a job is gender mixed if not more than 60% of men or women are in that job. So you have a good balance between 40 and 60% of men and women in that job. So back in 1998, we had about a third of jobs that were gender mixed, 27%. And that dropped by 2019. It was down to 18%, so only one fifth. What makes this problematic is that women, when they join the labor market, tend to join female-dominated sectors and occupations. Many of those female-dominated occupations are low paid. Think about personal care workers, cleaners, helpers, general clerks. More than 80% of workers in those sectors are women, and they are low paid jobs. Mm. It's not the complete picture. We also have a lot of women who benefited, and actually more than men, from employment growth in well paid jobs. Interestingly, these well paid jobs that women take up are predominantly in state paid sectors: public administration, health, education, etc. And these are sectors where working time flexibility, reducing hours, working part-time are much easier than in a lot of medium and well-paid jobs in the private sector. So this career choice seems to be made already with the idea in mind, I will want to balance care responsibility, raising a family with my career, so I'm probably better off in a public sector job than in a private sector job. So we already, at the start, and even before the gender pay gap kicks in, decisions are made based on future ability and possibility to combine work and life better.
And again, that is to a large degree about social or cultural norms, because in countries where it's a legal obligation to be provided with a year's maternity or parental leave on the birth of a child, do we see the same kind of issues emerging?
No, we see clearly in countries with good provisions, good childcare, but also good leave provisions, we see much smaller gender employment gap and better possibilities for women.
Okay. But then when we talk about it, ultimately it comes down to having babies. Is that what we're saying? Because does maternity leave, and of course there's other care responsibilities also, but that care responsibilities tend to be at a later stage in a woman's life if it's looking after elderly parents, or it's at a later part in a point in their career. But does this maternity leave and this childcare issue, does it really play the most significant role in the gender employment gap? Or are we looking also at this embedded structural element as being kind of the one of the bigger obstacles?
I think it's not having babies as such. It is who takes care of the babies afterwards. So let me illustrate that by looking at working time. So on average, men spend a little over 42 hours per week in paid work. And women, again, on average, spend a little less than 37 hours per week. So that's a difference of 6 hours. And a large factor behind this difference is, again, that women are more likely to work part-time. A third of women, 28% of women work part-time. Only 8% of men do so. Now, in the European Working Conditions Survey, we also ask about time spent on unpaid work, for caring activities, for cooking, for housework, etc. And here the picture is exactly the reverse. Women spend on average 13 hours more than men on unpaid work each week. So 30 hours, more than 30 hours for women, less than 20 for men. And it's quite interesting to see that in countries where the gap in paid work is smaller, France would be an example, Luxembourg, Sweden, Finland, again, the Baltic countries, the difference in time spent on unpaid work is also smaller. So there seems to be a link, a more equal sharing of responsibilities in one area, paid work, is linked to a fairer sharing of the burden in the other area, unpaid work. So it really is this balance, who takes on that responsibility, who cuts back in paid work in order to have the time for the unpaid tasks, where the differences are most apparent and where I would argue the main problem lies.
It's funny because as you talk about that, I remember one of the most shocking statistics is that if you add unpaid and paid work together, a woman actually works 8 full weeks a year more than a man. Which, when you look at that statistic in its raw, stark terms, really does make you consider what is possible, what can be done to radically improve the situation so that we're in a situation, as you said earlier, that by 2030, we have in fact managed to close these gaps to the targets that are in place. And it would seem to be at this point almost impossible, but perhaps I'm being extremely negative. And this is where I would ask the two of you to come back to me and talk to me a little bit about if you had the policymakers in the room with you, if you did actually have the possibility of shaping things, give me three ideas that you would bring to the table in terms of how we could close these gaps. But, Carlos.
Okay, so I can start with one of them. Barbara already mentioned, in fact, extensively, it's the fact of, you know, childcare provision, because we have said repetitively in this conversation, you know, like it's a very important step where we see the gaps emerging between female and male is with this interruption in the career related to maternity, because doesn't have to be the case, but we know in practice is the woman the one that gets, you know, the higher share of the responsibility. So providing childcare that it's easily accessible and affordable, it's going to make easier for females, particularly families, but especially for females, since they care more, I mean, they take more responsibility on the issue, to combine the personal life with work. So it's going to allow them to have less interruptions or shorter interruptions or no interruptions. And that's going to help them in, you know, having a narrower employment gap so they can participate still in the labor market and avoid the interruption that we have said that starts the emergence of the gender pay gap as well. Mm-hmm. So, and then, for example, as well in relationship to, you know, the second reason, apart from part-time for women getting, less pay, it was the sectoral segregation, right? That they tend to work in sectors that pay less. So Barbara mentioned, right? Like sometimes female tend to specialize in certain sectors. So I think working towards, you know, making sectors more balanced in terms of gender will help, for example, you know, we know there's less presence of female in higher male dominated sectors, just like science, technology, you know, mathematics, think these type of fields
STEM,
that are characterized in general by higher wage levels. So, I mean, the gap, in fact, is closing down. You know, female are accessing more and more these sectors as well. But the more it's done, the more it will help to close the gender pay gap, because female will be able to work in these higher paying sectors as well. So that will be a second target. And, you know, that could be done, I don't know, by providing better gender sensitive career counseling, for example, at the, you know, when you're still in university or in the high schools, or as well providing, you know, better career opportunities or prospects in sectors where females are more present, like in the care sector, for example. So, you know, working conditions can get improved and offer more career perspectives as well. So I will mention those two points, for example.
Okay. Barbara, what can you add to this?
It's difficult to add, but my main point is that we need to address the unequal distribution of care responsibilities between men and women, because, as I outlined, it influences career choices, it influences career progression, and therefore then earnings over the life course. Now, that is actually not an easy thing to do through policies, because it is so embedded in cultures and values, etc. So I think one possibility is to set more and better examples for men across the spectrum of professions, but especially probably in higher level positions, in those with supervisory tasks, to take paternity leave, to take parental leave, to which they have a right, to reduce hours, to work part-time if there are young children at home. Promote those examples, encourage others to follow those examples. That, I think, is a very important point. And in terms of policy, I would argue reviewing working time and examining the possibility of working time reduction in general is another thing that we need to explore, given that, as we can see in the European Working Conditions Survey, 45% of workers say they would prefer to work shorter hours. And this is most prevalent among fathers with children. They are most likely to say, we would actually like to work fewer hours. So it's not that what we see today as the status quo, it's not that this is what people want. So I think working time is a big issue here and could really make a difference.
Okay, so in fact, we've tackled sort of the gamut or the range of issues, I think, by looking at childcare provision and provisions to allow women to go back to work, but also looking very much at the sectoral segregation aspect, both in terms of the pay gap and also the employment gap. And then there's the unequal distribution of tasks. That's cultural a lot to do with embedded in our societies and how we expect things to be. So we need to make an effort at large to change that. And then I suppose the working time. Yeah, well, we're moving towards looking at least at a 4-day week and perhaps this new world of work, which encourages us to have a hybrid approach to working for those who are in a position to do so, could also find its way to facilitating this by making the work-life issues or imbalances a little bit fairer for both women and men. But I suppose what does come to mind as we talk about this, it does all seem to hinge around, though we're taking into consideration so many other aspects like the sectoral distribution and the occupational, etc. But we're also looking at a time where demographic change sees us with an aging population. We have low fertility rates, so we're not reproducing at the level that we would wish to be if we're going to maintain the kind of economic activity. And yet we're not facilitating that in a way that makes sense across the board. So it would be useful, I think, for us to integrate this into the discussion about how that could also boost another policy area, which is to try and address the aging population issues which are emerging in our society. But that is for another day, where perhaps we will come back and discuss that later. So thank you both very much. I know it was a bit of a whistle-stop tour of the gender pay gap and the gender employment gap that most people have spent decades researching and analysing. But thank you for for your contributions. And I hope you as a listener have enjoyed today's talk, which is to mark 8th of March, International Women's Day 2024. And don't forget that you can find this episode, but also the other episodes on gender equality on our podcast series. And you will find us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. So don't forget to follow us there. And also to access any of the information that you have found us discuss today, which is on our website according to the topics that you've listened to. So until next time, when you're a fan, talks to you.
Good jobs, quality jobs.
We still have so much to do for women's rights.
For the parents to go to work, you need good childcare.
We will not have a successful recovery if we leave social rights.
Reinventing our way of building and living.
It is our right.